Chapter 37. Mark Murphy had never felt worse. His nose was red and painful to touch, but he kept having to blow it, so it felt like it would never heal. To make things worse, he was a serial sneezer. If he did it once, he'd do it 4 or 5 times in a row. His head felt stuffed to the bursting point, and every breath sounded like there were marbles rattling in his chest. If there was one thought to give him comfort, it was that misery loves company, because nearly everyone on the Golden Sky was in a similar condition. Linda Ross's symptoms were only slightly less severe than his, but she hadn't escaped the viral infection that swept the ship like wildfire. Every few seconds, she'd shiver with a bout of chills. Most every passenger remained huddled in their cabin, while the galley pumped out gallons of chicken soup and the medical staff passed around handfuls of cold tablets. They were alone in the library, sitting opposite each other and holding books on their laps in the off chance anyone wandered in. Both had tossed wads of used tissues on the nearest coffee table.
"I now understand why they chose to release the virus on a cruise ship."
"Why?"
"Look at us. For one thing, we're basically trapped here like rats, stewing in our own juices. Everybody gets exposed and remains exposed until they catch the bug. Second, there's only a doctor and a nurse. With everyone getting sick at the same time, they're overwhelmed. If these terrorists hit a city, there are plenty of hospitals to help, and therefore much less exposure time for people to infect others. An outbreak could be isolated and the victims quarantined pretty quickly."
"That's a good point," she said idly, too miserable to become engaged in conversation. A few minutes later, Murph said, "Let's go over it one more time."
"Mark, please, we've done it 1,000 times already. It isn't the air conditioning or water systems. It's not in the food or anywhere else we've checked and double-checked. It's going to take a team of engineers tearing this tub apart piece by piece to find the dispersal device."
Murph had been unable to come up with the solution without the distraction of the cold racking his body, and he really held little hope that it would come to him now. But he wasn't one to give up.
"Come on, Linda. Think. This is basically a floating city, right? What does it take to run a city?"
She gave him a look that said she wasn't interested in playing his game, so he answered his own question.
"Food, water, septic, garbage removal, and electricity."
"Yes, they're going to poison the garbage."
He ignored her sarcasm.
"Or let's look at this another way. A cruise ship is a hotel. What do you need to run a hotel?"
"The same things," Linda said.
"Plus little mints on your pillow at night."
"You're not helping."
"I'm not trying to."
Mark suddenly shot forward in his seat.
"You got it."
"Poisoned mints?" she said archly.
"Who brings the mints?"
"A maid."
"And what is she doing in your room in the first place?"
"Cleaning up and changing the..."
"Holy God.
I remember back in Greece when we rescued Max's kid. They had a bunch of industrial washing machines, but no dryers," Murph said. "They were training. The virus is introduced in the laundry. Passengers get fresh sheets every day. And if that doesn't expose them to the virus enough, there are fresh napkins in the dining rooms as well as in the crew's mess."
"How perfect is that?"
"Wiping your mouth with a tainted napkin is as effective as giving someone a shot of the stuff. I bet within 12 hours of it being introduced into the washing machines, everyone on board comes into contact with viral-laden linens."
He clamped his hands over his head.
"Why didn't I think of this sooner? It is so obvious."
"It's only obvious after you think of it. Kind of like finding something in the last place you look,"
Linda teased, throwing Mark's words back at him. She slowly levered herself to her feet.
"Let's go see if you're right."
The quad bike was designed to handle rough terrain, with its extra-large shocks and springs, but Juan was pushing the four-wheeler to its very limits as he chased after the pickup. With shells impacting scant feet ahead of it, its driver was forced to keep an erratic track, and Juan made up the lost ground quickly.
Chairman, it's Holly. This is the 45-minute warning. Repeat, impact in 45 minutes.
I hear you, Juan said. They were now cutting into their margin of safety to clear out of the strike zone. I just wish I hadn't. Webs, I want you to hold fire. George, I need you to distract the guy in the back of the truck so I can get close. Buzz them.
Roger.
With a knee pressing him to the pickup's bed and the barrel of an assault rifle jammed in his neck, Max had no idea what was happening around him. The gun was suddenly pulled away, and the guard fired a short burst. Max turned his head enough to see that he was firing into the sky. The Robinson suddenly flew over the truck, so low that the guard had to duck. Max used the distraction to ram an elbow into the guy's groin. The blow was clumsy and awkward and didn't seem to slow the man at all. He whipped the gun around, and Max blocked it with his arm so that when it discharged, the bullets sailed harmlessly into the darkening sky. Eyes burning from the spent gunpowder, Max saw his opportunity and punched the guard's exposed flank. The guard counterpunched Max in the face. The renewed agony seemed to goad Hanley, and he went into a rage, swinging wildly and slowly getting up to his knees to get more power behind his punches. The pickup's bed was too confined for the guard to bring his assault rifle to bear, so he used it to shove Max off of him. Hanley went down, sweeping out his leg to knock the gunman on his butt. Max stood shakily, clutching the side of the truck to keep himself steady. Juan was not more than 2 feet from the pickup's rear bumper on an all-terrain vehicle. He was hunched low over the handlebars so the driver couldn't see him. Max could see Juan's lips moving as he spoke to either George, still circling overhead, or someone on the Oregon. Max jumped the supine guard like a professional wrestler, only the elbow he smashed into the man's gut wasn't for show. The guard's eyes bulged from his head and his cheeks expanded as every bit of air in his lungs exploded out of his body. A few seconds later, another round from the ship's main gun hit just in front of the pickup truck. The driver slowed and veered left, giving Juan a chance to pull up alongside the vehicle.
Max, stop screwing around and jump!
Juan shimmied forward on his seat to give Hanley as much room as possible. Max crawled over the rear gate to crouch on the bumper. He reached out with a leg, getting it over the saddle seat before throwing his weight. He landed solidly, clutching at Juan's waist to keep himself firmly planted. Nigel, the English guard driving the truck, chose that moment to look in his rear-view mirror. Realizing the prisoner was escaping, he swerved toward the ATV, forcing Juan to slam on the brakes. Nigel jammed on his, and then when the ATV started to scoot away, he went after it. With 2 big men astride the quad bike, the vehicles were evenly matched for speed over the rough ground. Juan couldn't pull more than a few feet ahead of the pickup, and no matter how sharply he turned, the driver kept with him. The responsivist had to have realized that if he stayed close to the fleeing four-wheeler, the big cannon targeting him wouldn't fire.
He's toying with us, Juan spat, glancing over his shoulder to see the truck's flat grill less than 5 yards from their rear wheels. And we don't have time for this. By the way, it's good to see you. And boy, is your face a mess.
Good to see you too, Max yelled over the wind. And it feels worse than it looks.
Hold on, Juan warned, and sent the ATV over the hill that led back to the road.
They roared down it at a breakneck pace, Juan turning the handlebars so that the bike skidded onto the macadam. He cranked the throttle as the pickup fishtailed behind them. They gained 50 feet, tempting Juan to call in a shot from the Oregon, but the pickup was much faster than the ATV on the smooth road and closed up the gap again before he could issue the order.
Webs, prepare to fire HE at the end of the dock.
Standing by.
What are you doing? Max called anxiously.
Plan C.
They flew down the road, although not at the ATV's top speed. Cabrillo needed to keep a little in reserve. They shot past the still flaming ruin of the guardhouse, threading around smoldering sheets of corrugated metal. Juan hit the dock and opened the throttle as far as it would go, expertly judging speed, distance, and time.
Fire!
The pickup's driver hung back, not understanding why the ATV would intentionally corner itself on the pier, but when he realized it wasn't slowing, he hit the gas to keep close.
George!
Juan shouted into his radio. Prepare to pick us up in the water! The pilot replied something that was lost to the wind. Juan and Max rocketed down the length of the dock, coming up on 50 miles an hour. Max finally realized what Juan was doing and shouted, "You crazy son of a bitch!" They flew off the end of the dock, sailing out almost 20 feet before splashing into the sea. An instant later, the pickup screeched to a halt in a four-wheel drift that almost flipped it on its side. Before the truck fully settled on its suspension, the door flew open and the guard raised his assault rifle, wanting nothing more than to kill the two men as soon as they surfaced. The high-pitched whistle lasted less than a second, giving the guard no time to react. The explosive shell actually hit the dock and not the truck, but it hardly mattered. Both were disintegrated by the blast, sending debris arcing across the sea. Juan helped Max claw his way to the surface. He spat out a mouthful of water and surveyed the damage behind them. Half of the dock was simply gone, while the rest had become splintered timber and destroyed pilings.
"Was that strictly necessary?" Max grumbled. "Remember me telling you about one of my first missions with the company?
Something about a Russian satellite. An orbital ballistic projectile weapon." Juan pulled his arm out of the water to check his watch.
"It's going to obliterate this island in 38 minutes. I, for one, want to be as far from here as possible."
The Robinson R-44 was trailing smoke when it appeared over the cliff, beating its way to the dock. That must have been what George had tried to tell us, Juan thought, that their helo was damaged. Adams deftly swung the chopper over the two men, hovering just above them, the downdraft kicking up a choking mist of roiled seawater. He came down even lower until the skids were awash. Juan reached up to open the door and helped Max clamber into the chopper. It dipped dangerously as his weight upset the center of balance. He was about to follow Henley when a stream of auto fire bracketed the helo.
"Go!" he shouted and clutched the skid.
George didn't need to be told twice. He revved the engine and tore away from the dock, where another pickup truck had appeared with two men in its bed, hammering away at them with AKs. Hanging by his arms and legs like an ape, Juan clung to the Robinson's skid for all he was worth. The wind buffeting him was brutal, and his wet clothes felt like ice, but there was nothing he could do about it. The Oregon was only a couple miles out, and he didn't want George to slow down for him to climb in the cabin. Adams must have radioed ahead about the situation, because every light on the ship was ablaze, and extra crewmen were on deck to assist in the landing. The helmsman had already turned the bow away from Eos Island, and the old girl was underway. George gave himself plenty of clearance as he came over the fantail. He ignored the warning lights flashing and horns sounding in the cockpit that indicated his beloved chopper was in her death throes. He imagined the oil burning away in the overheated transmission as he gently reduced his altitude. Juan let go of the skid when he was just above the waiting hands of the deck crew. They caught him easily and lowered him to his feet. They scrambled out of the way to give Adams the room he needed to set the Robinson on the deck.
"Helm! Flank speed," Juan ordered the instant the skids kissed the pad. "Sound general quarters and rig the ship for collision."
Adams killed power as soon as he felt the skids bump down, but the damage was already done. Flames erupted from the engine cowling and around the rotor mast. Crewmen were standing by with fire hoses, and he and Max jumped from the chopper amid a torrent of spray. George looked back when he was a safe distance away, his handsome face drawn. He knew the chopper was a total loss. Juan clamped a hand on his shoulder.
"We'll get you a shiny new one."
They went inside before the wind became too strong. In the Oregon's wake, Eos Island crouched in the sea, an unsuspecting, ugly lump of rock that was not long for this world.